This episode of Faraway is Closed was recorded one morning in Cadiz on May 4th after reading the news about Roe v. Wade and feeling despair and coming out on the other side of it and that journey and wanting to share with you what that journey looks like from despair to the other side of despair. I don't know what that place is called yet, but it's not despair. I recorded it all at once, boom, 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 23 minutes straight. So I hope it is of service. With lots of love from the sea. And the Mask Came Off is the title of a blog post that I wrote about 2 weeks ago in a small town in Portugal, but I feel like it's the theme of what's happening now in the world. I'm talking today, May 4th, reading the news about the possibility of Roe versus Wade being overturned. The possible possibility and the shock it feels. And you know, I really, I was so despondent, and I still will continue to be, but I went through a process this morning from a kind of despair to something else, and I feel I want to tell you about it. I want to tell you about what helped me. Well, the story begins for me with this podcast. It begins with colonization. It begins with a trip to Portugal and the curious conversations there that happened about colonization, just like that. We were sitting at a cafe in Lisboa, which is a beautiful city. Coming to Portugal after having been in Spain is, you se nota the difference. That is, there is a change in decibel. In Portugal, the voices are softer. They're in cafes. In fact, I was amazed that to see so many quiet cafes. Lisbon doesn't feel like a big city. It's a softness to it. And whenever I enter Portugal, whenever I go to Portugal, I'm always reminded of the very first time I went to Portugal, somewhere in my 20s when I was traveling with a friend in Europe. It's a story I tell in The Good Manners of Colonized Subjects about how I was traveling on an Indian passport and very nervous at the border and at the border of Spain and Portugal, crossing it by train. It was very early in the morning. It was almost dark. Actually, it was not quite dawn, and the train stopped and customs officers came on the train and took your passports and looked at them. And they did this with my passport. They took my Indian passport and looked at it. And I was very nervous. There was a group of men. I remember them as a group. Maybe there were two, but maybe there were more. I don't know. But I remember they had my passport for what felt to me like a long time. And then one came back and handed the passport to me and said to me, "Welcome home." And what he was responding to was my last name, Coelho, which, it's a common, very common last name in Portuguese. I was telling someone the other day that before my father's family, before they were colonized, by the Portuguese, before their religion changed, that they were Hindu. And my father tells the story that, as far as we know, we were Saraswati Brahmins, and that our last name was Prabhu, which means God. And I was laughing and telling someone yesterday that we went from Prabhu, which means God, to Coelho, which means rabbit, from the one to numerous. So that is the context of how I think of Portugal. It's this strange intimacy that colonization brings you because of my last name. And, you know, there's this curious connection to Portugal. I don't know that much about what the experience of the Portuguese colonization of India was for those who lived it, but I have a sense. It feels similar to what happened in New Mexico, in the sense that there are people who, from the encounter with the Portuguese, who are very proud of their Portuguese roots, or the way that people in, there are folks in New Mexico who are very proud of having roots from Spain. And then there are people whose families in India who have bloody images of their families refusing to convert to Catholicism, who were beheaded. I mean, just bloody, bloody stories. And fleeing and that loss of self. And so with all this is, I go to Portugal, and one day in Lisbon, a lovely sunny day, we're sitting at a cafe and we strike up a conversation with folks, with a man sitting next to us, an older man nursing a beer. And he's curious about us too and asks, are we from India? And I'm with my family and I say yes. And then he says that actually his grandfather was born or lived a long time in India. In fact, in their family, they have a Goan curry recipe that is still that he, this man, makes every Christmas. And he says that, you know, there is this great connection to India that he feels. He says, I said to him, well, I do this play and I know Os Lusíadas, this epic, your epic poem about the Lusíadas. And I speak one part of the poem, one verse, when the writer of the poem, his name is Camões, describes first arriving, how it was when the Portuguese first arrived on that shore. I think they arrived in Calicut. And I think I've spoken about this before, but yeah, so I tell him about this and he says, you know, Camões wrote love poems also. And being who I am, that I just sparked at that because it was like the beginning of a monologue that I have that I'm going to write. So Camões, I don't know that much about him, but I'll tell you what I know. He was a sailor. He was many things. But he was also a sailor. He had been to Goa after Vasco, many, many, many years after Vasco da Gama, I think decades, and comes back and writes this poem, which is an account, a reimagining of Vasco da Gama's voyages out of Portugal into, and it's about the Portuguese succeeding in this enterprise of finding India, finding places where all other European powers have failed. And I know about Camões, someone once also told me he lost an eye in a battle in North Africa. And that he died very penniless. He did not, his great work was not discovered or heralded till after his death. So this is what I know about Camões. And when this man says to me that we're sitting next to us, Camões wrote lovely love poems. And then this man went to look online, but didn't find a poem that he liked. So, but he read out loud to me one line of a poem that Camões wrote, a poem about love. And it was so surreal. And I have to make a monologue about it or something. I think Encounters in Portugal will be a play or something like this. And then just a few days later, I happened to see a tea shop and I wanted to buy some tea. But it looked, what called to me was the name. It says, Compañía Portuguesa do Chá. And it looked like it had, you know, it had that look that sort of vintage looking chai stores do. And so I go in and I'm just like, it's like walking back into the past, all these beautiful, bins of tea, but not open, like closed, of course. And everywhere these, it had like blue and red aesthetic. And then there's this profile of a woman on the back of it. And it's on all the merchandise, all the teas have it, many of the teas have it. And so I start talking to the man in the tea shop And I say, I'm from India. And then we started talking about tea. I said, who is this woman that's on all your merchandise? He says to me, this is Catherine of Braganza, who married, she's a Portuguese noblewoman, who married Charles II in May 1662. Part of her large dowry was the Portuguese territory of Bombay, says somewhere online that I'll link to this description of her biography in my blog. It says here that the king agreed to transfer control of Bombay to the East India Company, and it soon became their base. So Catherine de Braganza, actually, she's more than a noblewoman. She is the daughter of Portugal's King John IV. And she marries the newly restored monarch of England, King Charles II. So she gets Bombay as part of her dowry. And she becomes queen, the Queen of England, Scotland, and Ireland. And she packed loose leaf tea as part of her belongings, something that she took with her. And the idea is that she was the one who made tea famous, or the practice of tea. This is the description, another description of her. This was from a BBC documentary that I found online. There's a really great description of how she used tea. The way that the guy in the tea shop told it to me, let me start with him. He says, look, see, Portugal was trading with China long before other European countries. In fact, they had a long relationship with China. They were trading tea, and Portuguese became the exporter of tea to other European countries. Now, because Portugal had this long relationship with tea before other countries in Europe, it had developed a kind of practice of tea, of 5 o'clock tea. It had become part before in other countries, tea was something you drank when you were sick. But in Portugal, it had become a practice. And so when Catherine of Braganza goes to England, to the court of her new husband, Charles, she begins this practice of tea parties at five, having tea at five, and it becomes all the rage. And to get to the BBC documentary, this is the quote, this is the narration that I really like from the BBC documentary. It says, the spouses didn't really know each other, but Catherine found a way to get to be with her husband. She established at 5 o'clock they would have tea. As tea is a hot beverage, it takes time to drink it, so people have a chance to talk. And soon enough, the whole court started to imitate the queen. I was really flipping to hear all this, and I said, God, I would love to use this in The Good Manners, like as a prop, this profile of her. And he only had these small boxes in red and blue, and they were very strong colors. I said, no, I think I would like another color. And he said, hold on, and he went in the back and brought me a tea. It was like a cream-colored box with a profile of her, and I really like that, and I am going to use it. So I said, thank you. And I was talking about colonization, and he said, it was crazy. He said, you don't just go to another country and put up your flag and say, this is mine. So this was the other, and I was so startled by his owning up to it, you might say. That I just kind of was bemused. I was almost like comforting him and saying, oh, this is in the past. But it was a very bemusing thing, because I was also thinking the first man that we had met who had a recipe from Goa, he did say something like, he said, because of all this thing we are going through in Portugal where we're questioning our past, we are losing our traditions. And I think he was responding to maybe something that is happening in Portugal and former colonizing countries, that there is a looking inward. You know, I have friends who come from other European countries who keenly feel that their connection to a legacy of colonizers who really, you know, killed and disrupted and all the verbs that you can use for oppression, did that to countries that were not their own. And so all this happened in Portugal. And then I spent some days in a small Portuguese town by the sea where there is a school of navigation called by Henry the Navigator, who is meant to have begun this whole maritime enterprise. Like, before that, people thought the world ended, you would fall off the edge of the earth. And he really wanted to see what was beyond and organized all these expeditions and had a school of navigation, so they say. And this town is very dear to me, and I had some time to be there and just feel the beauty. I mean, I that's the curious thing about being in Portugal. There was so much love. And then coming back to Spain and coming back into the dance and to the song that I'm here for. The time, I spent all this time with family who were visiting from the US, and then this notice, the continuing war in Ukraine, all the other wars that I don't know about, meaning that I'm not following, that are not on the news, but are persistent, especially what is happening in Palestine, Gaza being an open-air prison for decades now. And then what feels to me from far away, this dismantling of things in the US. I woke up this morning so down, just, you know, I was like, I didn't expect this to happen after the pandemic. I thought we had all learned better. We had taken time. And I think, you know, I think we have taken time. What I want to say, I was looking at how I felt. Yes, I felt horrible. I know there is work ahead. I don't know what will be my response. You know, what is my true act in response to this dismantling of rights for women? But I know that I feel very free to choose my action. I don't feel I must because I feel obligated to. I feel very free. And here is the other thing I feel. I've seen in my encounters with people, I'm talking on one-on-one encounters with people, I feel so much more open to sharing. And I've been receiving so much. I've had deep conversations with strangers, which, granted, I often have those because I do. I really feel that we have to take note of how we've changed for the better. I'm saying there is this divide in the world. There is all this, what is happening on the stage of the world, in governance especially, in countries, in governance, in kind of an administrative governing kind of way. It's just falling apart at the same time. And I'm not just saying this because I've kind of started something new in Spain. Or maybe I am. I don't know. But I guess what I'm inviting you to do is to take note of the ways things in your life, in your relationship to yourself, to your creativity, to your kindness, how those things have changed. Because I'm feeling that you might, side by side with feeling despair at what the world is coming to, you might find that there is a lot that has changed already for the better in you, in people that you know, that has not yet found form. And even just speaking to you, even just saying this out loud, I feel a corresponding resonance in myself that, yes, I am saying what I mean to say. That's what I want to invite, suggest, hope I don't have hope just like that. I have hope because I'm feeling it, because I'm remembering how I lived this pandemic. I'm remembering how my relationships with many people have deepened, that even people who have very different opinions than me, especially about vaccinations, I have some of them, I have deepened my relationship with them. Now there are some relationships that have fallen away. It's true. But they've all felt natural. It's been natural. And so I come back to this phrase that I had used, and the mass, and I use that phrase because that day I was in Portugal in this small town in the south, that it was the day that you didn't have to wear masks anymore on the streets or inside restaurants. You had to wear them on masks and in buses and public transport, public places, public government places. But, you know, you could take them off when you went into a restaurant, when you were gathered together in a room with other people, when you went into a class. And the same is true now in Spain. No one is wearing masks, for example, in our flamenco classes. And so the masks are off in so many ways. And honestly, I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm just noticing this dissonance between governance, politicians. There always was, I know, but it feels even more, that divide feels even more greater. And so I am inviting you to take a moment or two to really reflect on how you've changed. It might not feel like you've manifested all the things yet that have become clear to you that you want to do in this life. But I'm guessing, just because we've been still, that things have changed with you, with people that you know, with your relationships, with your encounter with your own creativity. And you know, I don't know what I'm going to do next for, in terms of workshops, in terms of writing. I know I'm going to continue with my flamenco classes, but I don't know what I'm going to offer next in terms of, but I know I want to offer something. And it might be something called Sundays in Spain, where we just meet an hour every Sunday and we write and journey and embody together. You know, where I guide you, guide us through some writing, some reflecting, some meditating, and it becomes this bower of creativity, this moment of stillness, this time out of time that allows us all to take a deep breath, be who we truly are, and so that we re-enter the world from a place of spaciousness. Whatever you decide to do, whatever your form of activism is, your form of standing up or sitting down for what you believe, your form for finding peace, for finding equilibrium, I do think it does come down to our individual acts. I am such a fierce proponent of do what you love. I mean, these messages are coming to me everywhere from people I don't know. Every encounter I have, it feels, is helping strengthen my belief, my feeling that the revolution begins with you, with your act, with your decision to do what you love, what brings you peace, what brings you joy, because the joy you have in what you do is catching. It changes the world. Do what you love. Be wild. Be free. Be true. Be you. Ole. My hope is that from this place of feeling your own truth, that you and I, that we, will choose how we respond to injustice in the world. I'm going to end with a poem that came to me that emerged out of a conversation I had in a small town in Portugal by the sea, a town that's very dear to me. It was a conversation in English and French, and I feel it's an ode to the unexpected, and it just gives me hope that things arrive, messages arrive with words that help you on your journey, that we have the possibility of being surprised by life, And the poem, I did two versions of it to honor the English and French of the conversation. I did a version in English and a version in French. It's called 1, 2, 3. And the French version, my friend, my dear friend Irina helped to translate it and also reads it. And I'm really quite enchanted with the sound of her reading it. Irina is one of the co-founders of Grace Note Massage in Santa Fe. Really an amazing healer. So here is Irina reading the poem in French. 1, 2, 3.
Un, deux, trois. Un poème de Shivana Coelho, lu par Irina. J'écrivais dans un restaurant vu sur mer, en buvant des souvenirs dans mon vin. Lorsque j'ai remarqué un homme à la porte demandant poliment « Pouvait-il entrer sans masque ?» Le barman a dit oui et l'homme est rentré et a salué quelqu'un qu'il connaissait là-bas. Ils ont bavardé un peu, puis il a demandé une bière et l'a bu, tout en parlant des choses qui changent. Derrière lui, sur une très grande télé, défilait l'actualité des élections en France. Il était jeune. Cela, je l'ai remarqué. J'étais en paix. Cela, je le sentais. Être de nouveau à cet endroit, saluer chaque pierre que j'aimais, chaque chemin, chaque chose verte en croissance, chaque plage et la mer. Ah, la mer. Et la courbe des rochers. Et la seule rue principale. Mon histoire de marcher dans des vents forts. Et un navigateur que je connaissais. Et les histoires que j'avais déjà écrites. Être là et tant de joie dans ce retour. Ressentir tout cela et la simplicité de grandir en moi-même. Je lui ai parlé de la télé derrière lui. Des élections dans son pays. Et il haussa les épaules. Il voulait être loin de là. Il n'avait peut-être pas de chien dans cette guerre. Est-ce cela l'expression? C'était comme choisir entre la peste et le choléra, tu sais? Il a dit, et j'ai dit oui, je sais ce que tu veux dire. Il y avait seulement un pas du bar à ma table. Et 1, 2, 3 verres de vin plus tard, assis en plein vent, à l'extérieur, fumant une cigarette qu'il avait roulée, je mis mon chapeau et parlais de danse, de musique, de liberté, surtout de liberté. Il y avait une lumière orange quelque part sur le côté d'un mur. Pas un lampadaire, c'était un orange doux sur le mur extérieur du resto. Et elle est tombée sur son visage quand elle parla de la mer. La vitesse du surf, la pente raide des montagnes où elle était née, le calme des lacs où il a appris à nager, comment il était chez lui dans l'eau et sur les sentiers, et comment c'était de sauter d'une falaise et répandre son para. Elle, et d'être l'oiseau, aimer les courants, quand tu tombes et te relèves et retombes encore. Il connaissait l'électricité. C'était son métier. Jusqu'à ce qu'il soit fatigué d'être électrocuté. Il tendit la main et la fit trembler en mémoire. Assez, il avait dit, et s'est abandonné à autre chose. Suivre, juste suivre son amour pour la mer, le vent, le mouvement, le présent éternel. J'avais entendu des histoires d'hommes et de garçons vivant dans des camionnettes qui allaient et venaient chaque saison, les garant au bord des falaises ou sur le parking de la maison du navigateur. Un aubergiste que je connaissais les appelait une peste dans la ville. Je n'avais pas l'intention de les chercher, mais le restaurant, la porte et les pas. 1, 2, 3, dans la nuit et le vent. C'est la liberté qui m'a éclairée. Ce qu'il m'a dit à propos de la chanson et de la danse, se rendre, il a dit, célébrer ma propre voix, même lorsqu'on apprend la façon dont c'est fait. Ne sois pas timide, a-t-il dit, chante à haute voix, tu sais. Il aurait aimé avoir un meilleur anglais, un meilleur portugais, un meilleur espagnol. Et j'aurais aimé que le français que je connaissais me soit revenu. Ça l'a fait parfois. Mais principalement, c'était un enchevêtrement de langues que nous avons parlé, surtout ça. C'était le vent soufflant dans la rue, de la mer et de la joie, de l'imprévu. Il a disparu comme il était arrivé, courtoisement, dans la nuit, en direction de sa camionnette, conduire vers un ailleurs. Et je souris maintenant en pensant à tout ça. Comment j'ai élevé ma voix dans le vent et il a applaudi et écouté. Comment les palmiers se balançaient et la mer chantait.
One, Two, Three, a poem by Shabana Koyla. I was writing in a restaurant with a view of the sea, feeling memories in the wine, and noticed a man at the door asking politely, could he enter without a mask? The bartender said yes, and the man came in and spoke a greeting to someone he knew there. They chatted a bit, and then he asked for a beer, drank it, talking all the while about how things change. Behind him, on a very big TV, news about the elections in France. He was young, that much I noticed. I was at peace, that much I felt. To be once again in this town, greeting every rock I used to love, every path, every green growing thing, and the same sea. Oh, the sea, the curve of rock, and the one main street in my history of walking in strong winds, and a navigator I used to know and the stories I had already written about being there. Feeling all this and the ease of growing into my own self, I spoke to him about the TV behind him, the elections in his country, and he shrugged. He wanted to be far from it all. He had no dog in that war. Is that the expression? It was like choosing between la peste et le choléra, you know, he said, and I said yes. I know what you mean. There was only one step from the bar to my table, and one, two, three cups of wine later, sitting in the fullness of wind outside, smoking a cigarette he had rolled, I put my hat on and talked of dance, song, freedom, above all, freedom. There was a light, an orange light, somewhere on the side of a wall. Not a street light. It was soft orange on the outside wall of the restaurant, and it fell on his face when he talked of the sea. The speed of the surf, the steep of mountains where he was born, the still of lakes where he learned to swim, how he was at home in water and on trails, and how it felt to jump off a cliff and spread your para wings and be the bird, loving the currents as you fell and rose and fell again. He knew electricity. It had been his trade till he got tired of being shocked. He held out his hand and made it tremble in memory. Enough, he had said, and surrendered to something else, following his love for sea, wind, movement, the eternal present. I had heard stories of men and boys living in vans who would come and go every season, park their vans beside cliffs or in the parking lot of the navigator's house. An innkeeper I knew called them a plague in the town. I had no intention of seeking them out, but then the restaurant, the door, the steps, one, two, three, into the night and wind. It was the freedom that lit me. What he said to me about song and dance, to surrender, he said, to celebrate my own way, even as you learn the way it's done. Don't be shy, he said. Sing out loud, you know? He wished he had better English, better Portuguese, better Spanish, and I wished the French I used to know would return. It did sometimes, but mostly it was a tangle of languages in which we spoke. Mostly it was the wind blowing down the street from the sea, and the joy of the unexpected. He disappeared as he had arrived, courteously, into the night, in the direction of his van, driving somewhere else, and I smile now to think of it all, how I raised my voice into the wind, how he clapped and listened, how the palm trees swayed, and the sea sang on. Faraway's Closed podcast is produced and edited by Shibana Koilo. The music used is a track from The Good Manners of Colonized Subjects, my play, and it was composed and produced by Carlos Merino.